This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You have a right to an attorney, and if you cannot afford an attorney, then one will be appointed to you. That's the Miranda rights. We hear it all the time. It's part of that potboiler dialogue on the TV shows about law and order. But what does it really mean, and what does it mean here in Bexar County? How does indigent defense work? Why is there a growing call for it to be reformed? Have you ever had to have a public defender represent you in court? How did that work out? Lots of ways for you to get into the conversation. You can give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You can also email us with questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon with Jeff Burkhart, Executive Director of the Texas Indigent Defense Commission. Rosalie Joy is the Vice President for Defender Legal Services at the National Legal Aid and Defender Association. And Stephanie Stevens is with us, a clinical professor of law and supervising attorney for the Center for Legal and Social Justice at St. Mary's University. Welcome, all of y'all. It's great to have you here this afternoon. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. We'd really like to hear from folks who've had to depend on a public defender. And how did that work out? Do you think that you were well represented? So, Stephanie Stevens at St. Mary's University, can you talk about the system that we have in Bexar County? How does that work?
Well, we currently do not have a public defender system for the trial level. We do have an appellate section that deals with court-appointed attorneys representing people on an appeal. We have a public defender system that deals with a mental health docket, but that's their limitation there. So the average person who, if you are brought into the system and you cannot afford an attorney, you will be appointed one, and they are an attorney who has allegedly been qualified, and I think that although
you passed the bar.
You've passed the bar, and there are a few more requirements depending on how high the level of offense is. So you've got to have more experience, in other words, in order to qualify to take a first-degree felony, which is one of the more serious ones. And then you'll be appointed that person. They'll be your lawyer and represent you throughout the proceedings. There really is no supervision over that attorney, whoever that is, because it's not a formal office structure with somebody that they report to.
How does a person who says, I can't afford an attorney, get connected to that attorney? Who makes that love match?
The courts do. The court administration has a system set up. Allegedly, it's on a rotation system. So,
you said allegedly, right?
I did. And the only reason I said that is because sometimes people appear in court and the judge will appoint someone in court on the spur of the moment for them. So if someone comes to court, maybe they initially thought they could hire a lawyer. They went out there, began price checking, and realized it's not something they could afford. Came back to court and said, I changed my mind, could I have a court-appointed attorney? And if they qualify in terms of their income level, the court might just sort of look around the room and pick someone that they know or someone that they've worked with before and say, this will be your attorney.
And so how much is this attorney being paid?
Very little. There's a flat rate fee that lawyers can request. So that it just, you file a one-time bill, essentially $150, say, for a misdemeanor, $300 for some of the lower-level felonies, and that's all you collect. Or you can bill at an hourly rate, and the court has in-court time and out-of-court time that you can bill for.
So $150 compared to what a defender a lawyer I would hire off the TV, you know, it's going to be a big difference, right?
A huge difference. Let's say you were
maybe a tenth of what it would cost.
Sure. You'd probably be lucky to find a lawyer who would take your case for $1,500, a misdemeanor. You would consider that a good deal.
So you have to wonder, what are we getting for that $150 for that public defender?
Well, that's the problem. I think even very well-intentioned attorneys who take court appointments are pushed because you have to take more cases on to make a living. And you get too many cases, and obviously you cannot represent people well.
Jeff Burkhart, Executive Director of the Texas Indigent Defense Commission. What's wrong with this system?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, a lot of things wrong with the system are the things that have been wrong for over half a century at this point. And what Stephanie was saying is exactly right. I mean, you know, this all really kind of got off the ground in 1963 when the U.S. Supreme Court decided Gideon versus Wainwright. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, states you have to provide an attorney in cases, felony cases, where somebody can't afford one. The problem with that was they never said how to provide that or how to fund that. And so the states just kind of took that and ran with it. And Texas essentially did what a lot of states did, which is turn to its counties and say, okay, counties, you do it. And that's been the case for a very long time. And so in Texas, you know, if you go to a place like Delaware and you only have three counties, not such a big deal. If you go to a place like Texas where you have 254, it becomes this really bad patchwork of indigent defense. And in fact, until the late 90s, there really wasn't anybody on the planet who could tell you exactly what indigent defense looked like in Texas until there was a big study of it. So part of it, the problem is the patchwork. Part of the problem is we haven't valued it, the Sixth Amendment right to counsel, the way we've valued other amendments, the First Amendment or the Second Amendment. And we haven't really grappled with the consequences and the place that indigent defense plays in criminal justice.
You say that we have this patchwork of systems in Texas, but, you know, how can we compare Harris County to Love County?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, when you're talking about one of the largest counties in the United States, I mean, it is a little bit apples and oranges. But when it comes to representation, there are certain core things that an attorney has to do, regardless of where you're at, whether you're in Harris County or in Loving County or something in between. Every attorney should be investigating the case. They should be doing legal research. They should be communicating with their client. They should be appearing in court, and they should be filing pertinent motions. That doesn't vary depending on where you're at. I mean, that's going to be the same throughout Texas.
But Rosalie Joy, most attorneys who get hired for these public defenders and they get that $150 check, the only thing they actually do is, my experience is, they tell the client, take the deal.
Well, and in many instances, that is exactly true. And that is why public defenders and even the private bar argue that people are entitled to a much greater degree of justice. The question is, what kind of justice are we after? What is the goal in the criminal justice system? I think we all want to feel safe in our communities. That includes public defenders and private counsel who are out there trying to represent people the best way they knew how for $150. But at the end of the day, if we're not investing in public defense in a meaningful way, what we are doing is creating more costs for government and for system and even for communities who suffer from the consequences of not having an effectively functioning justice system in their community.
But as people call for reform, they're also blanching at the thought of what that might cost. And they're talking huge price tags, Rosalie Joy.
Yeah, they are talking huge price tags, but I would ask you to consider the huge price tag that is involved with continuing to administer justice in forms like we see, just like in Bexar County, where we're not investing on the front end of cases to address all of the underlying drivers of criminal conduct, those underlying drivers being drug addiction and mental health, and the need for good representation so that we have a balanced justice system where you have public defenders who can question the authority of the government and really ensure that people who are accused, and people who are accused are our neighbors and they're our family and
right.
friends.
Everybody's and trying to see if justice is actually being served. We got to take this break here. The phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Have you ever needed a public defender? Was that a good choice? The Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about indigent defense. Bexar County, the cost for indigent defense totaled $12.5 million in 2017. That rates as one of the lowest larger counties here in Texas. Jeff Burkhart is the executive director of the Texas Indigent Defense Commission. What does that say about Bexar County that the county spent $12.5 million on this?
Yeah, David, that's a great question. I mean, you know, it doesn't just say something about Bexar County, but all of Texas, really. I mean, the when you look at average expenditures per capita across the United States for indigent defense, in other words, what are we paying each of us out of our own pocket for this, for the government to do this? Nationally, we're talking about somewhere in the ballpark of $17 a person out of my pocket or out of yours. In Texas, that average is a lot lower. We're talking about $9. And in Bexar County, in fact, it's even lower still. Every person in Bexar County is essentially paying $6 per capita for indigent defense provision. So, you know, that's one way to look at it. I think another frame for looking at this is when you look at any standards on criminal justice, there has to be some parity between indigent defense and prosecution. And like you said, $12.5 million is what's being spent on indigent defense. When you compare what's being spent on prosecution in Bexar County, there's a pretty big gap.
Right. So, but does it cost this county or the state in the long run more money by housing people in jails who may not need to be there? Is all that put in the calculus, Rosalie Joy, with the National Legal Aid and Defenders Association?
Well, I think it is, and the point that I'd really like to make here is that we have to consider as a community what the cost to us is on the back end if we don't have smarter investments on the front end. And we talk about the cost of increasing support and resources for public defense, but what is the cost if we don't? What are we doing to our communities, and what are we cultivating with our young people that are finding themselves involved in the criminal justice system?
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980, as we talk about indigent defense, a public defender, people who can't afford an attorney, and the attorney they end up with appointed to them by the courts. Let's go to Raven. And Raven, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that there's in Bexar County, there's quite a division between public defenders and the alternate and main group of attorneys who represent indigent clients, and that's a court-appointed attorney system that is managed by the judges, the county judges. And so the importance of that is that a lot of these attorneys actually don't have any institutional knowledge, and often are working as independent, somewhat like contractors, to handle these cases, which means you can get a really good attorney or you could get a really bad attorney. And also there's no one managing how well they're interacting with their clients. There's no one really overseeing if there should be a complaint made, how those complaints are being researched or checked. And that's not the case, though, with the Public Defender's Office, which is led by Michael Young, and he's very a very good public defender and is pushing to get the Public Defender's Office expanded. And so I work with an organization called Texas Organizing Project, and we'd really like to see how we can improve our indigency defense plan here in Bexar County and also change the culture, because what I do is talk with people every day on the streets who have been affected by the court system and the criminal justice system, and they really have almost no faith in these court-appointed attorneys. And so we really want to see that change. We want to see the culture change. And so we're hoping that with everyone kind of being more familiar with the difference between a public defender and a court-appointed attorney, maybe that'll bring some light to the need for expanding that public defender's office.
Raven, thanks for calling in. Appreciate that. And Texas Organizing Project is pushing for reforms here in Bexar County to the public defender's system that we have. So Stephanie Stevens, the clinical professor of law and supervising attorney for the Center for Legal and Social Justice at St. Mary's University, do you think that what Raven is talking about, that there is room to get there?
I think there is. I've worked with Raven, and I hope to continue to work with her and some other groups. There's certainly been a lot of awareness. Attention has been brought to the issue, and I think that's a great thing, and I hope that we can keep the spotlight on the issue in order to have these changes occur. The problem is that the cost is going to go up. If we're going to do it right, we're going to have a higher price tag attached to it, and that's always difficult to get legislators to bite off on. People aren't exactly anxious to spend more money on what they see as criminals. So I do think that now that we're in the public attention, it's the time to try and make some of these changes She's correct. Mr. Young, who works with the Public Defender's Office in terms of the mental health program, has a wonderful program. To see that expanded would be a great thing. I don't know if that is in the future for us, but certainly there needs to be a reform of some kind.
So the issue is to figure out if there is a reform, if we need a reform, is to establish whether or not what we're doing right now is fundamentally unfair. Are people being harmed by what we're doing now? And have we been turning sort of a blind eye to it, thinking, well, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, is the system unfair now?
I think it's incredibly unfair. I think that if you have money and you're able to go out and hire a really good attorney who will investigate the case, hire experts if necessary, is very familiar with the system, you're going to get an excellent defense. And if you're innocent, that person stands a good chance of getting you off with what you're charged. If you are indigent and you're given a court-appointed lawyer who has very little access to all those extra expenses, such as investigators, expert witnesses, there's a good chance they are going to try and encourage you to plead guilty to something. And the problem is then, of course, you're labeled a criminal, difficult to get jobs, difficult to go to school. Perhaps if it's a felony, you're not even going to be able to vote. It's going to definitely marginalize you. And we have a lot of people in this community who have been disenfranchised because of that.
Jeff Burkhart with the Texas Indigent Defense Commission. Do you see the system that we have now as fundamentally unfair?
Yeah, I think there's pretty broad agreement that the system that we have in place is not fair and that it's underfunded and that we're not seeing the right results, the right outcomes, or the right kind of representation. And it's not, I mean, I think Raven, when she called in, made a lot of good points about Michael Young's office. I mean, and Michael Young is a wonderful attorney, but we're not talking so much about individuals. You know, you can get a good attorney or a bad attorney either in a public defender office or in a managed assigned counsel or assigned counsel system like you have in Bayer. The issue is what's the better system? What on the whole is going to guarantee better outcomes, better results, guarantee attorneys who actually research and investigate and talk to their clients and actually just work a case? I think there's pretty broad agreement that there's a big problem. There's some disagreement about the direction in which to go, but we've seen good studies across the United States. And in fact, a couple studies here in Texas that show public defender offices on the whole will outperform other systems, such as the assigned counsel system in Bexar County.
Right. So the assigned counsel system that we have in Bexar County is that we have, you know, private attorneys. They don't work for the county in and of itself, but they're basically hired on a case by case basis, literally case by case. They're hired. You're going to take this case and we'll pay you $150 or $500 depending on the magnitude of the case. And that is something that if they were working for a client with billable hours, they would burn through those dollars in no time at all, just picking up the phone. So they have to wonder, how many cases is that particular attorney handling at any given time? And are they actually providing a defense? Why even go through this charade at all, other than just to provide some sort of show that we're trying to, that we're pretending to provide justice? So I would love to hear Rosalie Joy's response to that with the National Legal Aid Defenders Association. I mean, is that an accurate portrayal or not?
I think it is a very accurate portrayal, but one other variable to put in that mix is understanding that there are great public defenders and there are great private counsel who are out there trying to represent clients in the best way they can within a courtroom culture that actually cultivates a lot of the problems. We have clients represented by both of those groups of defenders that are pleading guilty in our courtrooms, not only in Bexar County, but across the United States. They're pleading guilty not because they've done something wrong, but because it is the quickest way out of jail and back to taking care of family and to employment and all the other things in our lives that keep us stable.
Right. So earlier you said, Stephanie, that, you know, these are criminals. I mean, that's what some people see them as. Oh, they're criminals. But a lot of these people, maybe they got a DWI. Maybe they did something, you know, that you could kind of understand that happens to a lot of people. It's not right. I'm not saying that a DWI is a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying it does happen. But it does depend on whether or not you, what kind of attorney you can afford, will, the outcome will vary greatly, right?
Oh, absolutely. Many of people who end up in the system are falsely accused. Some are rightly accused, but the consequences, the whatever the punishment is that is worked out in exchange in terms of a plea bargain, should be fair and appropriate. And there's going to be a huge discrepancy between the types of plea bargains a high-dollar attorney can get in court from a prosecutor versus a young and inexperienced court-appointed lawyer who is taking these case-by-case assignments.
And so if you're able to hire a really good attorney, then they can go and they can make motions and they can fight for you and probably never actually, you may never set foot in a courtroom. They can get this tossed out. But if you have a public defender, they will say, they will meet you at the doorway as you go into court that day and say, hey, I'm your attorney. Here's what this is what they're offering you. You need to take the deal.
You're right. I mean, we see it all the time in court where a lawyer will walk into court on the day of the setting and begin yelling out their client's name around the courtroom to find them because they haven't met them yet. And so they don't know what they look like. They don't know who they are. They'll just be the first time that they're going to meet them is the day of court.
Well, so we've established that the system we're having now has a lot of flaws in it. Why are we still doing it this way, Jeff Burkhart?
Yeah, David, I think the biggest obstacle, one, is inertia. This is what we've been doing, and folks tend to keep on doing the same thing they've always done. And the other really is funding. And that's hopefully one area where the state, where we can help out, is we've helped build about 20 of the 30 or so public defender offices in Texas through funding and technical assistance. And then we stand ready to help Bexar County in any way we can. I want to go back real quick to just, you'd made the point about, bad private attorneys. It may not even necessarily be that the private attorney is bad. They may be a great person and they may be a very good attorney. But, contrary to popular belief, attorneys are human beings and we react to incentives. And if you have very poor incentives, such as $150 per case, the people will react accordingly and frankly can't afford to work the case like they should.
Are there limits on the number of cases that an attorney can take like this, Jeff?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually created, the Texas Indigent Defense Commission has created caseload guidelines. We did some studies with Texas A&M to establish those numbers. They're not mandatory, so every county can kind of do whatever they want. Having said that, there is a statute that requires public defenders to state how many cases they can take. We don't really have anything comparable for private assigned counsel.
But you have to wonder if these attorneys are really working on the behalf of the accused or if they're just stooge attorneys who are just moving things through the system, Jeff.
Well, yeah, there are certainly some lousy attorneys out there. And again, there may be some very good ones who are, again, reacting to bad incentives. We've set up a bad system for indigent defense. So even the best of attorneys, you may, get some great training. And once you get out there and you get into the trenches, not actually work your case because at $150 a pop, you can't afford to, which is a terrible incentive.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a break. The phone number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about public defenders, the indigent defense system that we have in Bexar County. Have you relied on it? What kind of outcome did you see? What would you like to see changed? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Are you willing to pay more in taxes for a better system? 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. An indigent individual, that's the legal term for a person who can't afford an attorney to defend their case in a court of law. Appointed attorneys then step in to defend those charged, and they get a fee from the court along the way. But what are their motivations? What's their compensation? Are they able really to provide a real defense for the accused, and is justice being served? We're talking about the system that we have here in Bexar County. We know that it's got $12.5 million in 2017 was spent on the system, according to the Texas Indigent Defense Commission, one of the lowest in Texas. Should we really talk about reforming the system? Who's going to pay for that? What would it look like? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Really would like to hear from folks who have used the system and what the outcome was like. And so Stephanie Stevens at the Center for Legal and Social Justice at the St. Mary's University, pro bono. We hear about pro bono all the time with attorneys, and that this attorney is going to take a case pro bono because they heard about some poor guy that's going to be run, you know, sent up the river because of whatever frame job or something. You see these things on Perry Mason all the time. Is this happening in real life? What's pro bono?
Well, pro bono means you're going to do it for free, for the good of the public, that you accept that that's part of our responsibilities as attorneys. It doesn't happen often. Sometimes you'll see people do it in a high-profile case, so I'm not sure it's altruistic. Maybe it's the publicity that helps your practice. Occasionally you see big civil firms that bring in a lot of money, are willing to help out and provide some legal assistance. Again, they're not trained in criminal cases, but they can learn it and they can work with criminal lawyers. It just doesn't happen very often that lawyers can afford to take on many cases entirely for free.
But Jeff Burkhart, the Texas Indigent Defense Commission, doesn't the Bar Association expect lawyers to do some pro bono work?
Yeah, that's correct. There is expectation that lawyers take on pro bono. I mean, it's kind of drilled into you in law school that that's part of the profession and it's part of what you're going to do. When it comes to indigent defense, though, there are a couple different problems. You know, you look at Bexar County and we've got somewhere in the ballpark of 14,000 felony cases and 22,000 misdemeanor cases, so one, far too many to be covered pro bono. But two, you know, we've seen in other states, you know, Kentucky back in the 70s and 80s, there was an attempt by the legislature to demand that all cases be covered pro bono, and basically that was held to be unlawful. So pro bono is excellent, and I think we need to be doing more of it as attorneys, but ultimately this is something that when you look at the Sixth Amendment, and you look at United States Supreme Court decisions on the Sixth Amendment, this is a government duty, and it's not something that can be shouldered simply by pro bono attorneys.
And Rosalie Joy, the National Legal Aid and Defender Association, when you talk to attorneys and maybe you say, well, maybe they should be required to do some type of pro bono work, even though that might be an oxymoron, they really recoil at the idea and they say, well, why should we? We should be paid for our work at market rates, right?
Yes, that's true. And when we sign on to become attorneys, we understand through our education that the system of public defense got started because there were lawyers in our communities who cared to help strengthen the community as a whole, and that started the pro bono system. And I think that most lawyers that enter into the profession, they are very much committed to giving back to community. But just like your private appointed counsel and your young public defenders, if lawyers don't have the appropriate amount of training and oversight, they don't belong in front of a courtroom defending someone's liberty, because that is what is at stake here, is liberty, and they need to be represented by someone who is competent to do so.
Competent, highly skilled, they know the ropes. This is not recess. This is for real. People's lives are on the line.
That's absolutely correct. Their lives are on the line. And if it was your family member or mine, we would want them represented by someone who can protect them.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Steve. Hi, Steve. Welcome to The Source. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
How are you?
Good.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
This is Takus.
Hi, Judge.
Hi, Judge. How back at you. I've been listening to this driving to work. I'm sitting in my car talking on a cell phone now at my office. And what I think is that if we're going to appoint lawyers and we're going to appoint an inexperienced lawyer, there are experienced lawyers that can help them. That you should not go on a major case unless you've sat second chair to a couple inexperienced lawyers. You know, some of the best cases I've ever tried have been on court-appointed cases. including John T. Satterwhite. But, I mean, that, I keep hearing this every time everybody's talking about, oh, they got, you know, there's a bunch of competent lawyers that have been doing court-appointed cases for years, and you never hear about them. That's the only complaint I have, is we're always talking about they got rooked, that this person didn't get justice. Well, you know, I've won cases and people complained about how I won it. So, you know, it goes with the territory. But the whole thing boils down to the competency of the lawyers. There are senior lawyers that would work with young lawyers to get them, let them sit second to a senior lawyer, and let them work their way up so that the judges know that these people are competent. And do away with appointments in the county courts for $150. That doesn't do anybody any good. All you have to do is about 10 of those to make a living. And, you know, all right, if you're not making a living, you got to hustle business somewhere else, and you don't have time to devote your time on these cases. But you will if you can get them trained.
All right, Judge, appreciate your call. So, Stephanie Stevens, your reaction?
Yes, I agree with Judge Degas that there certainly are a number of very good attorneys who take court appointments, take it very seriously, and do everything they should. The problem is it's hit or miss in the system that we have now. There are programs. San Antonio Criminal Defense Lawyers Association works hard to mentor young attorneys. Again, that's a hit or miss thing. The reason we formed the Criminal Justice Clinic at St. Mary's, as well as the Civil Clinic and the Immigration Clinic, is to train young people. We knew there were a lot of people graduating from law school and going out there and taking these court appointments and not being fully ready. So if they participate in one of the clinical programs, they have hands-on representing indigent people and learning how to do it, and hopefully it gives them a leg up and it helps the community as well. But that's only a small fraction of the lawyers that are out there practicing that go through a program like that.
But there's different types of cases. Some of them are low-level cases that are really kind of minor stuff to us looking at it from this point of view. But when it's impacting you and you're barely hanging on, you're living paycheck to paycheck and your life's kind of a hot mess, and now you got to, you're looking at spending some time in jail and over something you didn't do, and you have to depend upon an attorney who's getting $150 and they're telling, and they don't care, and you tell them you didn't do it. They don't even hear it. I mean, I've talked to guys in jail about this, and they're saying, I didn't do it, or these are my circumstances. If someone would just listen to me, but they couldn't even get anyone in the courtroom to listen to them.
I think that's a very real problem. We see it a lot where people come in and they want to appeal a plea bargain. They want to turn it over, and it's really hard to undo one of those once it's done. And the story that we hear repeatedly is my court-appointed lawyer never listened to me. They told me I should plead. They put a lot of pressure on me. I owe child support. I need to get out of jail. I got to support my kids. I've got to go back to work. So I took the plea. And then they want someone to sort it out later. They believe in the system and think it can, but it usually can't.
All right, another caller. This is Karen. And Karen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I've done court appointments in the past. I'm an attorney. And I just thought I would throw in a couple of other things to consider with the with our court-appointed system, that sometimes, you know, people, because they do want to go back to work, I agree with that, they can't afford, you know, that's why they get court-appointed attorneys. They can't afford even the time. That's one thing. I mean, I had one lady who was charged with enticement of a child, and then that got dropped down. It took her 2 years and lots of money to get out of, you know, the situation. If it was court appointed, I'm not sure that would have happened, because she would have probably ended up taking a plea, because you don't have, there's so much time and money involved just to go through it. The other thing is that you can lose benefits if you get convicted of a felony. So you have parents sometimes that have to consider their family, you know, husbands that have to consider the whole family, and then they end up taking deals. So there's a lot of reasons for taking these plea deals that are not good reasons. I mean, we really need to be finding a way around them, either by paying attorneys more or by, you know, because I don't do court appointments anymore as far as adults. I do juvenile, but not adults, because it is not worth it.
juvenile, that's a whole other show. We're going to have to do that sometime. Let me get the reaction to that from Jeff Burkhart.
Yeah, I think a lot of this comes back to the kind of system you have in place. You know, having the right amount of payment. I mean, we're not, you know, to be clear about it, we're not in the business of attorney employment initiative. That's not the goal of this. The goal of this is to serve people who are in some of the worst moments of their lives and to serve them well. But having said that, the attorneys being, you know, actually taking these cases should be reasonably compensated for that work. Not too much, not too little. And right now, I think they're being compensated far too little. But in addition to that, again, going back to the systems, when you get a city the size of San Antonio or a county the size of Bexar County, it only makes sense that you would have some mix of a public defender and private assigned counsel. I don't think it's an either or. I think you're in almost any large city, you're going to have a mix. But figuring out what's the best system, what's the best mix, and especially public defender offices, you get a lot more supervision and a lot better training.
All right. We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. What would reform look like? How much would it cost? What are we willing to spend? The number to call in, if you've ever had a public defender speak for you in a courtroom, how'd that work out? The number is 210-614-8980. If you're a judge or an attorney and you want to weigh in, we'd certainly want to hear from you as well. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Do we really have justice for all, or do we have justice for those who can afford their own attorney? And for those who rely on a public defender, if you have to have indigent defense, maybe not so much. Maybe you're just going to be told to take the deal and live with the consequences, whether or not you actually did the crime. What can we do? What can we expect to have in Bexar County with a reformed indigent defense system? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. So, Jeff Burkhart, with the Texas Indigent Defense Commission, you have helped other counties reform their systems. What would you like to see happen in Bexar County?
Well, I would love to see a couple things. And really, I should say at the outset that it's really up to Bexar County what happens in Bexar County. The state of Texas can't come in and dictate, and we don't have authority, nor do we have the desire to come in and dictate what the system should look like there. Having said that, I think you all and Bexar have a lot of good seeds for change here. You know, you have a strong public defender in Michael Young. There's a lot of potential there in expanding his office. The private bar is not going away overnight, and nor should they. And so we need to talk about how do we better manage that? Is there a managed assigned counsel system that we can develop that maybe looks something like the one in Lubbock? And those are both pretty valid directions. And again, I think it comes down to what kind of mix do you want between the public defender office and an assigned counsel system, preferably one that's managed where you have some sort of oversight and some sort of resources.
Well, give me a ballpark figure. What do you think we ought to spend on this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, just to get it up to what the average is in Texas, you'd have to go from $6 a person up to $9. So that would be somewhere in the ballpark of a 50% increase in what's currently being spent by Bexar County. I will say that when counties have started managed assigned counsel or public defender offices, our office generally funds up to 50% of the new office for the first 4 years. And so we're absolutely happy to talk to folks in Bexar about how that might happen and what we can fund and how we can help out.
So with this money, would it have to come up with new in other counties, as you've done this in other places, have they come up with new sources for the funds, or did this come out of the general fund? How do they do that?
Yeah, it varies tremendously. Yeah, some of it's been from general funds, some of it has been from new sources of revenue. And a lot of it, I mean, my push with the Texas Indigent Defense Commission is to really fight hard in the legislature to make sure that we have more state funding in this, that the counties aren't the ones who are bearing the brunt of this and having to shoulder the entire burden of it.
Right. I know we got to talk about the dollars. You know, the dollars, that's the grits for breakfast. It's going to keep you going throughout the day. If you don't have a financial framework worked out, all that we can just keep talking about this and never get anywhere. So Rosalie Joy at the National Legal Aid and Defenders Association, is this a national movement trying to figure out ways to fund and have sustainable, responsible indigent defense?
Yes, it very much is a national movement, and two primary areas of focus that I'd like to highlight for you is the need to increase resources for public defenders so that they can be present at first appearance. One of the largest expenses that we see across the United States is the expense of keeping people in jail pre-trial. If you have lawyers there at the very onset, they can be very instrumental in helping courts and prosecutors to control jail populations, to let people out of jail because we presume they're innocent. That's what the Constitution requires of us. If we do so, there is data across the United States as well that shows us that letting people out of jail, reforming our bail system, does not mean that we're increasing crime at all.
Let's go to the callers, and Chad is on the line. Chad, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. So I have some experience. I come from a family of five brothers, and they've been in trouble many times, and many times I have hired private counsel for them. I think an important distinction, and the last person speaking there kind of clarified that to some degree, is you can have extremely competent counsel in the public defender's office, but the big difference is the lack of, when we talk about resources, you know, the resources to go and get exculpatory evidence, the resources to appear at a bail hearing, the resources to do investigations, and finally go to trial. And that's why so many of these end up in plea deals, because that public defender office, when we say we're gonna offer, you know, at the expense of the state, a lawyer to defend you, that should include all of the things that would come with if you had hired a private attorney, and all the things that they would do. And so there's a big breakdown there where even very good lawyers, and there are many good lawyers that are public defenders, their hands are tied on a resource basis, as your last speaker said. And I think that's a really, really important distinction. And I've seen huge differences in outcomes with my brothers based on a public defender versus me hiring them an attorney. Because of that, that's a big deal. So when we say someone is indigent, it's not just that they lack the ability to pay for counsel and the immediate education and bar access of that counsel. It's all the things that go around that are exculpatory and provide a basis to allow that person out as the investigation is pursued by both sides. And that's
all right, Chad, thank you for that call. And let's go to Rick. Rick, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. I just had a really quick story. Due process is such an important thing. I had a nephew. He got in trouble. He stole a purse inside of a restaurant. From when he was stone drunk, he got caught. And he went in front of the judge. He got a court-appointed attorney. And then I asked my sister, well, do you need some money to get a real attorney, like a guy that's going to fight for you more than a court-appointed attorney? And during that process, he'd been in court once, and the woman, her defense attorney, said, take this deal, and the judge is, like, wanting to go that way. So on the day that it came up again to where he had to be in court, Royal Griffin, another attorney, showed up. I gave him $1,000, and he said, I represent this guy. And the judge would let him represent my nephew, and said, no, we're already going to go along with this thing. So he ended up going, and he never even ever came out of jail. He spent 5 years with sexually molested, got his jaw broken, his arm broken. But the thing was, he never got due process. And then 2 years later, that judge and the court-appointed attorney were jailed because the attorney had never really done work when she made claims that she had clients and did the client work. And the judge was tossed out here in San Antonio.
Okay. Rick, thank you for that. So, Stephanie, your reaction to that? That's quite a story.
That's a terrible story, and it does demonstrate many of the bad consequences that come from a guilty plea, and especially a plea in which it sounds like a young man who may not have had any prior record. I think with the right circumstances, that might not have been a prison-type case.
But what about the transparency of the system that we have now? Is there transparency? Do we know who's being, this lawyer is being picked for that case and what's happening and all that?
No, we don't. The judges have a lot of say in how the appointments occur, and we can tell based on auditor's records what forms people have turned in and how much money they billed the county, so you can tell how much a lawyer has made off of court appointments and out of what court. But the initial appointments, we don't know why, or you know, that's the judge's discretion.
And we've seen that go south sometimes.
We have.
All right, Alicia is on the line. Alicia, you're the last caller. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm an attorney and a community organizer with SA Stands. I just wanted to bring up how San Antonio is currently considering an expanded citation and release program, and I was wondering your reflections on how that will alleviate or not the issues that the Public Defender's Office and this criminal defense system is facing right now in San Antonio.
Alicia, thank you for the call. So that would involve marijuana possession. And this is something that District Attorney LaHood, who is now the outgoing District Attorney, he never really got off the ground a robust system. I think only 10 people ever qualified for that. But now we're talking with a new District Attorney, Joe Gonzalez. He's the elect. He'll take over in January 1st. He's promising a more robust system. He's also being talking about doing something, fighting for public defender reform. We're not sure to what degree. So, Stephanie Stevens, what are your expectations?
Well, I do think Joe Gonzalez is committed to working with reform and indigent defense. He was a defense attorney for some time before he became DA, and I think he's seen what goes on out there, and he also wants to make an effort to level the playing field with the prosecution. I do think cite and release will help a lot in terms of people being incarcerated for long periods of time, potentially because they can't make bail on very minor cases. This will prevent them from having to serve any time in jail, possibly not losing jobs, not being expelled from school, or other issues that go along with that. They'll still have to face the charge, but we're not going to clog up the jails with these minor cases.
Rosalie Joy at the National Legal Aid Defender Association, isn't there a concern about if suddenly everyone stopped taking these plea deals, the dockets would just choke everything? We wouldn't be able to move anything through the courts.
Well, David, I want to say that I was a public defender for 30 years before joining NLADA. And I can tell you in my experience that it doesn't matter whether someone's in or out of jail. As long as we have an assembly line justice culture in our courtrooms who are trying to manage very large numbers of criminal cases on their dockets, we will never get to the point of ensuring meaningful justice on either side of the coin unless we're able to invest in public defense, have lawyers in those courtrooms who can actually take the time to understand the case, to understand the client, and to really communicate well and effectively with prosecutors and judges about meaningful outcomes. We find that if you're out of jail, that process can be happening behind the scenes.
Right.
Not all of that work goes on inside the courtroom.
Rosalie Joy, thank you so much. She's with the National Legal Aid and Defender Association. We also heard from Jeff Burkhart, Executive Director of the Texas Indigent Defense Commission. Also in the studio is Stephanie Stevens with the Center for Legal and Social Justice at St. Mary's University. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.